أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين بارئ الخلائق أجمعين باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening the return of our Imam, let's recite the salawat. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. We are beginning hadith number 13 of the chapter regarding adhan and iqama from Al-Kafi. That was titled Babu Bad il Adhan wal Iqama wa Fadlihima wa Thawabihima. The beginning of Adhan, how it was initiated, or the first time that was introduced, and how that was, and also the value of the two, as well as the rewards for the two. This is hadith number 13 that we're starting today, as that's where we left off. We have an interesting hadith with an interesting point regarding the chain of transmission that we will mention. Let me first read the chain of transmission, or the sanad, or isnad, as some call it. Muhammad ibn Yahya an Muhammad ibn Ahmad an Ahmad ibn al-Hasan ibn Ali an Amr ibn Sa'id an Musaddaq ibn Sadaqah an Ammar al-Sabati. Now, generally, the people that are mentioned here are pretty okay people. Muhammad ibn Yahya, Muhammad ibn Ahmad ibn Yahya, another character, another person, another pious scholar, transmitter of hadith. Ahmad ibn al-Hasan ibn Ali, this is ibn Fadhal, Banu Fadhal, their family, people that there seems to have been an issue with their belief regarding tashayyu'. They are a sect that's called Fatahi. They believed in the imam of Abdullah al-Aftah, the other son of Imam al-Sadiq, before Imam al-Kadhim. How that works exactly is very confusing. It's not very clear to some of the teachers we had. And I personally haven't done enough research to say I have looked into it and have any form of clarity. But based on what was said, there is a bit of a question regarding their belief, how exactly it worked. Because they believed in Imam al-Kadhim. But first they believe in Abdullah al-Aftah, then when he passed, then Imam al-Kadhim. And the question is this, if they believe in Imam al-Kadhim, Imam al-Kadhim says Abdullah was not an imam. How can you believe in that imam if he is saying, while he's alive, not someone who's passed, not like the other sects? So it's a little confusing how they even came up with that. And whether or not they died with that wrong belief is a matter of, again, something that's not very clear. And of course, that part isn't really relevant to us. Most importantly, they were good people. They were pious people. They had some confusion, we can say. There were cases, like in the story of the Waqifis. Sorry, I paused there. There's another story regarding another companion that I had promised I would speak of. I wanted to make sure I didn't come to that companion or narrator, transmitter of hadith. Anyhow, the Waqifi movement and the people that were part of leading that, like Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Batani, they were non-pious, they were fasiq, they were deviant people, they were bad people. This family and the people, I don't know generally what the Fatahis, but these people were good people. I had a little confusion regarding that matter, but they were very much trusted. They were companions and believers in Imam al-Kadhim and him and the Imam after him, Imam Ridha salamullah alayh. So there's a little bit of a discussion in Rijal regarding them. Amr ibn Sa'id, I don't remember anything particular, but as far as I can remember, he's someone who's trustworthy. Musaddaq ibn Sadaqah, we consider him trustworthy. Ammar al-Sabati, this is the one that I wanted to speak of a little bit. Ammar al-Sabati, Ammar ibn Musa al-Sabati. Sabat is an area, Sabatul Madain. Is near one of the capitals or major cities of the Persian Empire before the Islamic arrival in Iraq, current-day Iraq. And it falls near Baghdad. And that's the city that Imam al-Mujtaba had gone to gather troops, and he was attacked by his own, the Munafiqeen, within his own camp. Sabat, Sabat al-Mada'in. Ammar is from that city, of course, not at the time of Imam al-Mujtaba, salamullah alayhi. This is Imam al-Sadiq, so Baghdad has not been established yet. Baghdad is a city that's established during the Abbasid rule, and that becomes their capital. Before that, it's Sabat al-Mada'in and, you know, what's around there. So there is civilization there. There are older and more ancient cities around there. But the city Baghdad, that name came to be during the Abbasid rule. Anyhow, Ammar is a well-known companion, and he's a transmitter of hadith. There's an issue regarding him that whatever he narrates has got to be taken in light of everything else. In other words, if we can fit what he narrates within everything else that we have heard from the Ma'sumin, then it's acceptable. Many times you'll find that the wording is a little off, and that's what has been mentioned in the Rijal books. And in our reading of his hadith, that's very evident. It is the case that Ammar ibn Musa al-Sabati, while he seems to have been a good person, he seems to have had many errors in narrating and transmitting hadith in terms of wording. Many times it's off, so it's difficult to draw a definite conclusion from what he narrates, unless there's other hadith that backs it, or at least we can say it doesn't contradict with anything else, and we don't find anything unusual with the wording itself. Here we will find a little something, I don't want to call it unusual, but it has led some people to think and misunderstand this. Of course, there's another element regarding that misunderstanding I'll get to. It's not only the wording that Ammar ibn Musa al-Sabati has given us, because the wording can be, it's a little unusual, but it's not deceiving, or it's not completely off. It's a little unusual, but there are clear indications as to what it means. There's another element in that person's understanding that has led him astray that I'll talk about a little bit. Now, the hadith itself from Imam al-Sadiq, salamullah alayhi, قال سئل عن الأذان. In other words, Ammar didn't ask, or at least he's not saying I asked. So the Imam was asked, عن الأذان هل يجوز أن يكون من غير عارف؟ Is it allowed for the Adhan to be performed by someone who is not an Arif? Not in the contemporary sense of the word Arif for non-Arab speakers. An Arif is someone who is knowing of something, knowledgeable of something. Someone who knows. Okay. Is it allowed for someone who does not know, who lacks knowledge? Literally, that's what that means. غير عارف. Someone that does not have knowledge, recognition, understanding. Okay. The question here is, understanding of what? Recognition of what? And this leaves room for a little bit of misunderstanding here. And to just say, من غير عارف, again, it leaves that, the wording is a little, I can't really pinpoint what's off on it, but it is a little off. But so let me explain what the misunderstanding is, so you see that other opinion. I call it a misunderstanding, but you think about it, and I'll explain why I think it's a misunderstanding based on the text here, and also why those misunderstandings happen. It says, so is it allowed for someone who does not have recognition or knowledge? قال, the Imam responded. This question was asked from Imam al-Sadiq, salamullah alayhi. قال, the Imam said, لا يستقيم الأذان ولا يجوز أن يؤذن به إلا رجل مسلم عارف. Adhan will not be correct. يستقيم means it doesn't hold. It's not, it doesn't stand. The adhan does not stand. It's not going to be correct, valid adhan. وَلَا يَجُوزُ, and it's not allowed except أن يُؤذِّنَ بِهِ, someone with the following qualifications recites the adhan. هُو رَجُلٌ مُسْلِمٌ عَارِفٌ, a man who is Muslim and who is knowledgeable, عَارِفٌ. What does this arifun mean? knowledge, recognizing that other understanding that we're saying is wrong, says that this means they know the Ahlul Bayt. They're Shia. Adhan has got to be done by a Shia. If it's done by a non-Shia, just by the due to the fact that the person is not Shia, which technically what we mean, what is meant by Shia, where it is a condition, is recognizing the imams as leaders after the Prophet, whose words are wajib to follow. مفترض الطاعة. We have got to obey them. They are the governors, the rulers, and no one else is legitimate. That's what Shia means. Anyone who lacks that belief, however much they love the Ahlul Bayt, however way they pray, however way they recite the Adhan, those all can be right. The person who does not believe in the wilaya of the Ahlul Bayt, does not believe in the governance of the Ahlul Bayt, does not believe that they are the rulers that need to be obeyed. Those who don't believe in that, yet they have done their research and they do Adhan the way the Ahlul Bayt have said, the Prophet said it, and they do it because they have recognized that that's how the Prophet did it. So their Adhan is the same as the Shia Adhan. If there is a condition that the person must be Shia, it means that if a non-Shia, someone who does not recognize the Ahlul Bayt as the rulers of the earth after the Prophet, if they do the Adhan, even in a valid, legitimate way, they do all the lines correctly, it's still not going to count. It has to be Shia. Okay. This is what that understanding is. Another reason we said غير عارف, we said not knowing, sometimes in the hadith, sometimes the word عارف with other words and modifiers has been used to refer to knowledge of who the Ahlul Bayt are. For example, in the context of ziyarah, whoever performs ziyarah of the Ahlul Bayt عارفاً بحقه, knowing their truth, their right, which is that is the essential right that is referred to, then وجب له الجنة or وجبت له الجنة. Jannah is God, in other words, it's a mandate. God has mandated that person go to paradise. But there's other words, other modifiers, other phrases that indicate, otherwise arif literally means knowledgeable. Knowledgeable of what? In the second part of the question, in the first part of the answer of the imam, this part, because I haven't read the rest of it, the imam says, رَجُلٌ مُسْلِمٌ عَارِفٌ. This is another part where, according to this account, because this is how Ammar has given us, I mentioned that point, it's important. Ammar, his wordings are not ones that you can really rely in the accuracy of the account, that the imams used exactly those words. Some of the companions, you can rely on their accuracy. He's a good person, but he's not too accurate. He makes mistakes. Some of the signs indicate that there is an issue with his Arabic, his knowledge of the Arabic language, because an Arab wouldn't, in the other ahadith where we have Arabs narrating hadith, they don't narrate, the wording is not like this. So there might have been even an issue with that. Anyhow, is that a correct understanding? No, it's not a correct understanding. Why? First of all, what type of question would this be? There would have to be something clear regarding it in the question where it would make it crystal clear that this is talking about, is the belief in imamah required for the adhan to be valid? Let me also make this clear. The believers used to live amongst Muslimin as we generally do. In some areas, of course, in the Muslim world, like in most areas of Iran, in perhaps some areas of Iraq, I haven't lived in Iraq, so I can't really comment on that too much, but it seems like certain areas are entirely Shia. There's no Sunni presence there. In those areas, it's hard for us to relate to the experience of Muslimin, where the Shia are a minority within the context of Muslimin, not in amongst Kuffar. Because out here, we're a minority, but we're a minority within a minority, and all of us are scattered. The main context we're in is non-Muslim. where the context is Islamic, but the majority are not Shia. There's a good Shia presence there, like in Kufa at the time. It's hard for us to relate to that experience. Most of the masajid were where the prayer was done by those who didn't believe in the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt. And then there are some that those going to that masjid and perhaps those leading the congregation are those who believe in the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt. For questions like this to refer to a question that they're saying, okay, if somebody stands and calls the adhan, if they're simply not Shia, can we rely on that? Or do we have to say, well, this guy was Sunni. Sorry, bro. We're going to have to do our own adhan. The person stands up. And this is not about saying, Ashhadu anna aliyan waliyullah. We went over this in a previous session. The Imam said the lines of the adhan in Qamah 35, 18 and 17, and we went over them. Ashhadu anna aliyan waliyullah was not part of that. We said that's very clear. And it was not common for the Shia to recite Ashhadu anna aliyan waliyullah during the time of the Imams. This is crystal clear. For anyone who does the research, it was not common to do in private or in public. How it developed, what context it developed, why do we say it is good right now, very good to do it, and that's why we do it. There's explanations for that, but right now for this discussion, it's important for us to understand that is not the concern. So the person stands and says, Ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah, then hayya ala salah, like, oh, there's a problem there, this guy didn't say Ashhadu anna Ali. No, it's not about that. Although the adhan of the Shia includes hayya ala khayr al-amal, and unfortunately, and those who are responsible for taking this out of the adhan of the majority of Muslimin are going to be responsible in the court of God on the day of judgment, but they have taken that out. The general Muslim believes that that's not part of it. That's a misunderstanding that inshallah is corrected. But the issue is, at this time at least, that that is not there. So you would be able to recognize the adhan of a Shia and a Sunni at that time. But the question, the way this understanding goes, is not about, oh, if it doesn't have hayya ala khayr al-amal, is it something we can rely on, we can not rely on? If a Sunni walks into the masjid and knows we're Shia, and does the adhan, and either thinks that it's okay to say hayya ala khayr al-amal, or although he's not Shia, he believes that he should say hayya ala khayr al-amal as part of the adhan because his research shows that the Prophet used to do it in that way. If they do it, the question, the way this person's understanding is that just because they are not Shia, it just doesn't count. That's their understanding. We're saying that's incorrect. Why? We said the first point is, for that to be the question, it needs a lot more clarity in the wording, and you need to have someone more accurate than Ammar ibn Musa al-Sabati to say that. However, there's a clearer indication here, because the Imam does not end the answer here. He says, فَإِنْ عَلِمَ الْأَذَانِ. So the person, the question was about someone who does not know, and then the Imam says the person must know. Of course, he mentioned رَجُلٌ مُسْلِمٌ عَارِف. Obviously, it's going to be a Muslim, and they need to be someone that knows. Then if that is the case, فَإِنْ عَلِمَ, if he knows the adhan, فَأَذَّنَ بِهِ, then he should call the adhan. وَإِنْ لَمْ يَكُنْ عَارِفًا, again, going back. So if the person does know adhan, then call it, and so be it. If they don't know, لَمْ يُجْزِ, it will not suffice. It's not going to suffice. أَذَانُهُ وَلَا إِقَامَتُهُ, and the إِقَامَة is not going to count. وَلَا يُقْتَدَى بِهِ, and you cannot follow him. Okay, so we have negated the idea that the idea of being Shia is required for the validity of the adhan of a Muslim for the prayer to start and for us to take care of the recommendation of adhan. This hadith is not talking about that condition. There's no such condition. If it is, then, if it isn't that, then what is it? Obviously, in our minds, I guess we would say, that what's the point of this question if that's not the point? Because if a person does not know how to call the adhan, how would they stand to call the adhan? They'll be embarrassed. In the middle of it, they don't know how to call the adhan. They'll screw up on it. And then the other thing is, well, it's obvious, isn't it, that the person who doesn't know the adhan and they stand and they say Allahu Akbar, then they skip a couple and then they hayya ala salah and skip a couple of la ilaha illallah. I'm like, okay, that wasn't really an adhan. Let's get up and do a real adhan. Someone's gonna get up and do it. So isn't that obvious? Why would that question be asked? And what would it mean? What would be the meaning of this hadith if it's talking about knowing the adhan? I want to again emphasize that Ammar, his ahadith, many times they lack that accuracy, and so we can't many times be 100% sure what that conversation that the imam had was. One possible, therefore, I would say, I can't say there's any clarity here 100%, because of the inaccuracies that we find in the narrations of Ammar ibn Musa al-Sabati. One possibility is exactly what's already been mentioned, meaning regarding the recitation of Adhan. Somebody comes, they don't really know the Adhan, they know some of the lines. Can we say Adhana? Well, he did the Adhan, he said Allahu Akbar. He had some mistakes, there were some errors, he didn't know how to recite it right. Can we rely on that, or do we need to have someone that says it correctly? Not perfectly in the sense that every letter needs to be pronounced right, but the words need to be done right. We do have this problem even today. We have sometimes in our masajid, in our centers, Arab and non-Arab, but mostly, or many times, at least from my experience, in non-Arab centers and mosques, the reciter of the adhan makes errors. There are errors in their adhan and in their aqama. Sometimes in the order of things, sometimes in the way words are pronounced, they misunderstand what a word is. They don't know what the word is. It's not their language in non-Arabs. And even amongst Arabs, I have come across Arabs, and I was shocked because I thought, that's their language, they should know better. But it was clear that the person did not know proper Arabic. They spoke Arabic, but they didn't know proper Arabic, so the wording, they didn't do it right. They didn't know what the correct wording is. So they tried to, like, I guess they thought of it as some colloquial other word or phrase, and so they mispronounce it. So one possibility is that it does happen. It's not something that doesn't happen. Perhaps the question is someone who doesn't know. The imam says, "In alim al adhan." If he knows the adhan, he recites it. That's fine. If he doesn't know it, then it doesn't count, and he shouldn't call it. And you shouldn't follow him in prayer, because if he doesn't know the adhan, then the prayer is more complicated than the adhan. The person, you can't rely on the correctness of his prayer. So that's one possible meaning. It does make sense, although it's not very widespread, perhaps, and many people may already have an understanding that, okay, we can't rely on that adhan. But when there are errors in the adhan that are not like skipping a few lines, as we mentioned, when it's so bad that you're skipping a few lines, yeah, pretty obvious. Well, that wasn't really an adhan. But when it's not skipping a few lines, it's mispronouncing this word, that part of it, not doing it right, not knowing the etiquettes right, the person's doing the adhan, but the way they're doing it, it's clear that they don't know what they're doing. It can happen, and the imam may be responding to that question. The other possible meaning, which is similar to that, it has to do again with the adhan, but in a certain other aspect, not about the recitation of the adhan, but about the timing of adhan. We have a set of hadith related to that, that the person who is going to recite the adhan needs to know the timings. There's an element of timing involved in adhan. If you don't know the timing and you're calling the adhan, you could be calling it before the time has come or after the time has come. Meaning perhaps the time has come to an end, you're calling the adhan for a different prayer. Mostly, of course, it's calling the adhan before the time has come in. So people are up, they want to do the Fajr prayer, they're involved with tahajjud prayers and so on, and then they're waiting for the time to come in. Someone gets up, stands up, and calls the adhan. The imam could be asked, the question may be regarding that. A person who doesn't really know that, we know this person doesn't know it. Can we rely on their adhan? Is it allowed? This makes a little more sense when the question is about it being allowed, not relying on it, because that's what the question, هل يجوز? Person who doesn't know the timings, is it even allowed for them to call the adhan? Today, we don't really rely on that. All of us have apps. Before the apps, there were printouts of timings of prayers. They would be there were websites. Before websites, there were printouts. You go to centers, there's timings that are mentioned there. You call people up. People who don't know timings, they figure it out somehow, and then they call the adhan. So the idea of calling adhan doesn't really connect to, is not related to telling the time for prayer. But back then, calling the adhan had a lot to do with knowing the time of prayer. You should be able to tell if is it Fajr time, is it not. Right now, we just check our app. Is it Fajr time or not? Back then, they had to be able to tell, is it Fajr time or not? Someone who can't tell that time is not going to be able to know this, the time just came in. You hear in Karbala, the companion of Imam al-Husayn, salamullah alayh, tells him that the time of salah is near. Oh, he knows the time. He's a mu'adhin. A mu'adhin knows these things. He looks in the sky, he's it's very easy for him to tell that the time of dhuhr is approaching. It's very clear, close. In the next few minutes, we're going to be hitting adhan time. A person who doesn't know that, can they call the adhan? Can they be the one who's responsible to tell the people that it's adhan time or the prayer time? Imam says, no, and don't follow him. And this could mean that if this wording is accurate, again, I am not very certain about the accuracy of this, because it's connecting the knowledge of adhan to prayer. If the question is about the person who knows the timing of adhan, and then the Imam says don't pray behind him either, or perhaps someone doesn't have the expertise for calling the adhan, but he's knowledgeable of the rulings of prayer. He can do the prayer right. He waits and he relies on the expertise of muadhinin. They call the adhan. He's sure the time has come in. Now he begins the prayer. Is there a problem with praying behind that person? Based on the understanding that ulama have and what we have seen in hadith, there's no problem with that. In fact, today most people are like that. Most of the people who lead congregations globally are people that if you leave them in the desert by themselves without any app, without any printout, we're not able to tell time. We know when it's getting bright, we know Fajr time has passed, but the time of Fajr coming in, we don't know. We know after it's come in, we're like, okay, we're sure now the time is definitely in because it's gotten a little brighter. We know the sun is coming out in the next 20, 30 minutes. So definitely Fajr time has come in. Or regarding Dhuhr and Asr, we can't tell when the time just comes in. A little while later, we'll be certain when the sun is halfway down. Okay, it's definitely Dhuhr or definitely Asr time. Okay. We don't know exactly when it comes in. Or for Maghrib and Isha, similarly. But the most difficult is Fajr. Telling that is not easy. We're not familiar with that. Most people are not familiar with that. Is it okay to pray behind them? Of course. So this hadith would be a little unusual in that regard. If that. So the inaccuracies here, again, are causing issues regarding what is the possible meaning. At this point, basically, or so far, the most meaningful interpretation is knowing the way adhan is recited, the lines, and doing it properly. Because even though that from that aspect the adhan is independent of the prayer, but if a person does not even know how to recite the adhan properly, then there's obviously an issue with us trusting his knowledge of the deen to put him up in front to lead the jama'ah, the congregation. So the imam could be giving us, if that part of the wording is correct, that would be the most plausible understanding that we could have at this point or so far. Again, the clearest line that negates the idea of this having anything to do with Shia and Sunni is the line that says, فَإِنْ عَلِمَ, after saying the criterion or the criteria are رَجُلٌ مُسْلِمٌ عَارِفٌ. The Imam continues and repeats that in a different wording. What's the wording? فَإِنْ عَلِمَ الْأَذَانِ. So it kept saying the person is knowledgeable or not knowledgeable. Knowledgeable of what? Of تَشَيُّعُ, of the wilaya of the Ahlul Bayt. It didn't make it crystal clear in the context, as we said. Because the way is questioned, it's highly unlikely in and of itself for it to be referring to knowledge of who the Ahlul Bayt are. But then here, it makes it clear what is the subject of knowledge. What is it that the person may or may not know? It says, in alim al-adhan. Adhan, knowing adhan. That's clear. What about adhan? The words, the lines, the time, the combination. Those are things that are a little unclear. The hadith continues. وَسُئِلَ, Ammar says, the Imam was also asked, عَنِ الرَّجُلِ. Let me, I said I'm going to mention something. There is a, there's a point that needs to be understood regarding fiqh al-hadith, meaning not the discipline of fiqh. Unfortunately, the word fiqh has become such a strong word in regards to the discipline fiqh that it's almost... amongst the Shia, lost almost the literal meaning of the word. Fiqh al-hadith means understanding, deep understanding of hadith, not ahkam of hadith, not the ahkam that derive from hadith. Fiqh al-hadith means understanding hadith. One important point is that, similar to what is mentioned in regards to the Qur'an, any text, is that we've got to make sure that our biases, our internal state of mind that is not a context for the understanding of hadith does not interfere with our understanding of hadith. This is a general principle. There may be a particular context that my mind is in, things that I'm dealing with. For example, in Fiqh al-Hadith, there's a list of hadith in the first volume, I believe, of Al-Kafi. They condemn and bash the idea of ijtihad very harshly. The Ahlul Bayt have bashed the idea of ijtihad. Or the other word is taqlid. So we see the wording there, like ijtihad, oh, it's horrible, taqlid, it's horrible. Oh, then what do? There's a certain mindset. Today, if they tell us ijtihad, what do we think? We think of mujtahideen, maraja, ulama that have studied and they've attained the rank of ijtihad. And then we look at that hadith, like, oh my God, it's true, the akhbaris are right. The Imams have condemned ijtihad. Ijtihad is horrible, and so on and so forth. Or when you think of taqlid, obviously the first thing that comes to your mind is following a mujtahid. Those two are very relevant terms, ijtihad and taqlid. That's a certain context that's in your mind or in our minds collectively today. Those are meanings that have developed for those two words in the last few centuries. In the literal meaning of the word, and in the context of the time of the Imam, those were not words that were used in those meanings. Taqlid did not mean that. Ijtihad did not mean what is meant or what is understood today. A certain context that surrounds our understanding of words today becomes a matter of interference. It interferes with the correct understanding of hadith. Ijtihad meant... at the time, as it meant after the demise of the Prophet, they say ijtahada wa akhta. Ijtahada wa akhta means he did his best to understand what's right and wrong, and he made a mistake. What do you mean exactly by he did his best to understand what's right and wrong? Meaning he relied on his own judgment. As we have wording from ulama, they have termed it al-ijtahad fi muqabil al-nas. Ijtahad as independent and sometimes against nas. We have nas in the Quran. Nas is scripture. Scripture. The Quran, hadith. There's Quran, hadith. You got to refer to the Quran, hadith about what you need to do. So I'm going to think on my own. I think this is best for Islam. The Prophet said on the day of Ghadir, Ali ibn Abi Talib, man kuntu mawla fa aliyun mawla. The Prophet, after his demise, some people, ijtahadu. They thought, I think it's better for Islam for this other person to be the Khalifa. Ijtahad wa akhta, and he made a mistake. This ijtihad is fi muqabil al-nas, is putting aside scripture and saying, I want to think independent of scripture. Regarding what? Regarding matters that your mind can understand independently? No, regarding matters that scripture has already spoken on, God has spoken of, he's mentioned what the ruling is, and you want to leave that? Those who left the guidance of the Ahlul Bayt were lost, and they didn't have access to the Sunnah of the Prophet, and the verses of the Quran were many times misinterpreted, and so they didn't have clear guidance in regards to some of the ahkam. And so the process of ijtihad in that sense, for someone who has studied the Quran vaguely, has entered the ocean of all the attributed words to the Prophet that is full of good and bad, true and false and fabricated accounts. Those who've entered that, and there's a big mess going on here, as long as they're just familiar with that, sometimes it would sit there and like, I think this should be the ruling. The concept of ijtihad in that sense, and the Ahlul Bayt bashed that idea. Of course they did. What did the Ahlul Bayt say to do? Like, refer to the Quran and Hadith. The word ijtihad that is used by the Shia ulama today for the past number of centuries, perhaps 10 centuries, if not more, or maybe a little less. I don't know the exact timing of the usage of that word, but from my recollection, I can go back as far as the 4th century. That's why I say roughly around 10 centuries. What is meant by ijtihad? Ijtihad literally is to put your effort into something. What they meant at the time was to put your effort in your own thoughts, independent of hadith. What Shia ulama mean by ijtihad is put your effort in understanding Quran and hadith. Not put your effort in thinking, oh, I just want to think, let me just hold my beard a little bit, maybe that gives me some thoughts, or maybe have a sip of tea or a sip of coffee or something, and I'll think about what's best for the ummah on my own. What the heck is that? That's not what the Shia ulama believe in. Ijtihad means putting all your effort in finding all the relevant verses in a hadith, and putting your effort in understanding each of them by themselves and in light of one another, putting the whole thing together and seeing what Islam says. Is that ijtihad bad? That's exactly what the Ahlul Bayt said in other ahadith. They just didn't use the word ijtihad in. So there's a certain context that our minds, or taqlid has a similar story. I already spent enough time on this one. This idea of our mindset on words and sometimes subjects, themes. Sometimes, like in this case, it's not this subject or that theme. It's another element. It's something that can be worded, needs to be worded a little differently. They call it al-asabiyya or al-madhhabiyya, or the different terms that are used. Today, in the Western world, they call it sectarianism. Okay, and if we leave all the misapplications of that term in the context, in the political context, and in regards to the Muslim world, there's a lot of nonsense that the Western media, in a biased way, is fabricating regarding conflicts in the region. There is an element between within the Shia and within the Sunni. It goes both ways, and all of us have got to be fair and have qist. God tells us even regarding non-Muslims, لا ينهاكم الله عن الذين لم يقاتلوكم وَلَمْ يَخْرُجُكُمْ أَنْ تَبَرُّهُمْ وَتُقْسِطُوا إِلَيْهِمْ. Non-Muslims, qist, be fair. Much less for Muslimin, it's beyond being fair, and tabarruhum, we're brothers. But unfortunately, sectarianism comes in. Within the Shia, identify as Shia, and those who identify as Sunni, they have this negative feeling towards a member of another Muslim school of thought. And as soon as, because of that negative feeling, there's a lot of room for misinterpretation. Then they look at this hadith like, oh, arif. There's that other hadith that mentioned or used the word arif in the context of Shia Sunni. It must be in that. Quickly come to a judgment. Brother, excuse me. The Imam said, first of all, it's Ammar talking here. He's not too accurate in the wording. Secondly, the Imam himself says, Alim al-Adhan. Irfan is not this current day Irfan, and it's not the Irfan of knowing the Ahlul Bayt. It's Alim al-Adhan. It's clear. But the person makes that judgment quick. And we have to be, whatever other Muslimin do, anyone, any Muslim, it's up to them. For us, and anyone who's hearing this, and all of us as Muslimin, we should make sure that we have fairness, number one. Secondly, in regards to the hadith, we have to make sure that we get rid of all of these contexts that form in our own mind that interfere in a correct understanding of hadith. Let me move on to the rest of this hadith. وَسُئِلَ عَنِ الرَّجُلِ يُؤَذِّنْ وَيُقِيمْ لِيُصَلِّيَ وَحْدَهُ فَيَجِيءُ رَجُلٌ آخَرٌ فَيَقُولُ لَهُ نُصَلِّي جَمَاعَةً or نصلي جماعة فهل يجوز أن يصلي بذلك الأذان والإقامة. A person does his adhan, does his iqama to pray by himself, furada as we call it, وحده, alone, by himself. فيجيء رجل آخر, another man comes, فيقول and says, نصلي جماعة, let's do jama'a prayer, which is a great thing that unfortunately in certain contexts I've seen the Shia brothers and sisters don't take this as seriously. There's a lot of emphasis in Islam on congregational prayer. If you're two, do congregational prayer. Husband and wife, do congregational prayer. Family at home, make sure that prayer is done in congregation. Don't force people in congregation, oh, you have to follow me. If they don't feel like they want to follow you in prayer for whatever reason, well, first of all, try to think, why is that? Why is there that type of thing? Anyhow, I don't want to go on a tangent. It's very important for us to do that. So another person comes and says, let's do jama'ah prayers. فَهَلْ يَجُوزْ Can they pray relying on the adhan and iqamah that the person did with the intention of furada? قَالْ لَا The Imam said, no. وَلَكِنْ يُؤَذِّنْ وَيُقِيمْ They should do another adhan, another iqamah now that this has happened. There's nothing in this part of the hadith that sounds odd or conflicts with anything else. There is something that needs to be said in this regard, though. Remember, in the context of mustahabbat, when it says this doesn't count or that does count, many times, unless there's something there that indicates it really, like if you want to do the mustahab, it's done this way. If you don't do it that way, then it doesn't count at all. It means that in order to do the proper adhan, it means that if you want to do the complete form of it, this is how you do it. Otherwise, because this is the context of mustahab, I did that adhan, I did the iqama, I want to begin the prayer, someone says, can we do jama'ah together? I have something to do. And I've done that adhan and iqama. Can I just start the prayer or do I have to? No, you can start the prayer. Now, if you have time, what should you do? The Imam says right here, can you adhan wa yuqim? Start over again. Now you're a jama'ah. The adhan is for jama'ah prayer. It's different. We had another hadith that was related to that. In the context of the various hadith that we have, it does make sense, and there's nothing odd in that part of the hadith. Hadith number 14, Muhammad ibn Ismail, we've spoken of him, the teacher of Kulayni, Anil Fadl ibn Shadhan, a very well-known scholar and a compiler of hadith, a narrator of hadith, An Safwan, so Safwan, not Safwan al-Jamal, the companion of Imam al-Sadiq, but the Safwan was the companion of Imam al-Ridha. An al-Ala ibn Razin, An Muhammad ibn Muslim. These are both reliable companions. An Abi Abdullah alayhi salatu wassalam, Muhammad ibn Muslim, the companion of Imam al-Sadiq, salamullah alayhi. He's a Kufi from the city of Kufa. قال في الرجل ينسى الأذان والإقامة حتى يدخل في الصلاة. The question is about a person that forgets adhan and iqama until he enters the prayer. He starts the prayer, Allahu Akbar, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, or Allahu Akbar. As soon as you say Allahu Akbar, you've entered the prayer. Okay, either you've started the qira'ah or you haven't. But as soon as you start the prayer, you remember, oh, I didn't do adhan or iqama. What happens? قال the Imam said إن كان ذكر قبل أن يقرأ فليصلي على النبي صلى الله عليه وآله وليقم وإن كان قد قرأ فليتم صلاته. Says if he remembers Before قبل أن يقرأ, before he begins his قراءة, before he says بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين, that's his قراءة. Before he does, he says الله أكبر, and he remembers as soon as he said, or while he's saying الله أكبر, he started that and he remembers. He says if that's the case, he hasn't started his حمد and surah, then فليصلي على النبي, recite the salawat, then وليقم, do your إقامة. Not أذان and إقامة. Remember the question was about أذان and إقامة. The imam says, recite the salawat and do the iqama. Not that it's wrong to do the adhan, but the emphasis here is on the iqama. Do the iqama. وَإِنْ كَانَ قَدْ قَرَأَ. But if he started the hamd and surah, بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين, you remember, oh my God, I didn't do the, I just read or heard all the ahadith about the greatness of adhan and iqama. I wanted to do it, but I forgot. The imam says, well, if you've started, then فَلْيُتِمَّ صَلَاتَهُ. He should complete his prayer. Hadith number 15, Muhammad ibn Yahya and Ahmad ibn Muhammad an Hammad an Hariz an Zurara. Very reliable chain of transmission. An Abi Abdullah alayhi salatu wasalam. Zurara asking or quoting Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhi. Qala man saha fil adhan faqaddama wa akhar. This happens. Sometimes I'm doing the adhan and I forget where I am. I start saying another part of the adhan. I skip. Okay, I do it, or I do. Yeah, I do a part that is supposed to be done after earlier, and I do the part that needs to be done later. I do that earlier part later. Okay, so I misplace them. In this case, what should happen? So one thing that I've seen people do is that they just leave it, forget it, they start all over again. They screw up, they start all over again. The imam says, you don't need to do that. The imam says, عاد على الأول الذي أخره حتى يمضي على آخره. So you said, for example, أشهد أن محمد رسول الله, أشهد أن محمد رسول الله. Then you skip to حي على الفلاح. Okay. What happens here? So, okay, go back to the Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah that you said. You skipped Hayya ala as-salah. Okay, we said Ashhadu anna Aliyan Waliullah is not part of it. If you skip it, it's okay. If you want to say it again, that's fine too. But the example here, which is an example of an actual part of the adhan being skipped, is Hayya ala as-salah. Hayya ala as-salah was skipped. Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, Hayya ala al-falah, the person says. Let's go back to the one that you delayed. You said Hayya ala al-falah here. So basically you did Hayya ala al-falah before doing Hayya ala al-salah. So go back to the one that you postponed, you left for later, and do that. So in other words, do Hayya ala al-salah and continue حتى يمضي على آخره, until he goes all the way to the end. So we don't have to restart the adhan or iqama. Wherever we catch ourselves skipping something, we went to the wrong line of adhan or iqama, go back to what you did correctly and start saying the right sequence and right order in the right order from that point onwards. Hadith number 16, Ali ibn Muhammad an Sahl ibn Ziyad. These are two teachers, or Ali ibn Muhammad is the teacher of Kulayni, Sahl ibn Ziyad is that teacher's teacher. An Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Nasr an Abi al-Hasan alayhi salatu wassalam. So Abu al-Hasan could be Imam al-Kadhim, it could be Imam al-Ridha, salamullah alayhimam. I haven't seen any research from any of the Rijalis regarding this, but there's a reason that it's probably, not 100%, but probably Imam al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi. I'll talk about that. Let me read the hadith. We spoke a lot about matters relevant to hadith, but not the wording that we're dealing with. It was the understanding part that we had to mention all those additional points. Anyhow, Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Nasr is a companion of Imam al-Kadhim and Imam al-Ridha salamullah alayh. There's a story related to that. I'll get to that and why, based on that, I think it's probably Imam al-Kadhim. قال يؤذن الرجل وهو جالس ولا يقيم إلا وهو قائم. It's okay for a man, for a person, to do the adhan while they're sitting, but Do not do the iqama until you're standing. Well, obviously, this is talking about someone who performs the prayer in the standing position. Those who can't stand, they have to sit for their prayers. It's a whole different story. Obviously, their standing is their sitting. Instead of laying down, they're sitting. But those who need to stand for prayer, obviously, when you're sitting, you're not prepared for prayer. So if you want to do the adhan while you're sitting down, it's okay. But for iqama, you need to be prepared for the prayer. So you need to be standing. Don't say the iqama while you're sitting down. وَتُؤَذِّنْ وَأَنْتَ رَاكِبْ وَتُقِمْ وَلَا تُقِمْ إِلَّا وَأَنْتَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ. Also, if you're traveling or you're in the city, but you're moving about with your means of transportation, you're riding on an animal at that time in a car these days, and while you're driving, getting close to the place where you're going to do your prayer, sometimes people who are long distances, they would just pull aside where it's allowed and legal and okay for them to get off the road. While they're getting off, they want to do the adhan, and then when they get there, they do the iqama. There can be a little gap, not too long, not an hour long, not 30 minutes, but a few minutes is okay. So while I'm pulling up to that place, can I do the adhan while I'm driving? And then I step out of the car and set down my mat, or if I'm comfortable doing it on concrete, which I am, like I just stand, I don't need to put a mat down. It's not a recommendation to put a mat down. That's not a recommendation. A lot of people think it is. It's not. Just stand there. And so anyway, so you can you do the adhan while you're in the car? The imam says, yeah, that's fine. For the iqama, however, no, don't do that. Get out of your car and get in the position of prayer, then engage in your iqama. Now, Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Nasr, we said he's the companion of Imam al-Ridha and Imam al-Kadhim. We mentioned, I think, in the last session, or maybe the one before that, that there's a comparison we wanted to make between Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Bata'ini, one of the leaders of the Waqifi movement, and another companion. That other companion that we spoke of is this man, Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Nasr. Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Nasr is a companion of Imam al-Kadhim. He narrates hadith from him. In fact, it seems most of his hadith are from Imam al-Kadhim. But he lived to experience the time of Imam al-Ridha. Whether he saw him in person or not, I don't remember exactly. I'm not too sure. There is an account that I can't really remember if that was with Imam al-Kadhim or Imam al-Ridha. And for that matter, I'm not sure if it was Ahmad ibn Abi Nasr or Bazanti. I'm pretty sure it was Bazanti, and I'm pretty sure it's with Imam al-Ridha, but that might be slightly wrong. So he might have actually seen the Imam. He definitely communicated with the Imam. I am not 100% sure if he saw the Imam. There is an account that came to my mind. Maybe some other time we can share that. Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Nasr al-Bazanti, in terms of hadith, is a very reliable man. A very reliable man. He is one of the three that are referred to as Mashayikh al-Thalatha, the three great shuyukh or mashayikh or teachers of hadith. In what sense? Mashayikh al-Thiqat, they call them. Mashayikh al-Thiqat, people who narrate only from Thiqa people. In other words, some believe that because of how reliable they are and how they treated narrations of hadith, they would only narrate from people that are reliable, so we don't really care who they narrate from. We don't check that person. If Bazanti narrates from him, that means he's a reliable person. That's in terms of hadith. Whether you know that's acceptable, who agrees with that view, that's a different thing. But they have been highly praised for their meticulous approach towards the transmitters of hadith and who they narrate hadith from, making sure there are people that you can rely on them. Some people are not as particular about that, unfortunately. They were. When the issue of waqf occurred, there's three people I want to mention here. This is Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Nasr. We had Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Bata'ini, and then we had another companion that we mentioned a number of times, and that is Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman, rahmatullah alayh. Yunus is also a companion of Imam al-Kadhim and Imam al-Ridha. Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Bata'ini, la'natullah alayh, was a person that lived at the time of Imam al-Sadiq, and as a child and experienced and was the representative of Imam al-Kadhim, then unfortunately started lying and saying that Imam al-Kadhim has not been martyred in prison and he's gone into occultation and Imam al-Ridha is a liar and so on and so forth. They lived at the same time. These are three figures that we have. One is Mal'un. We've discussed him. It's not really much to say. Between these two figures, Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Nasr is a person that got confused. There's a letter, and this is what I meant. We know that he has communicated with Imam al-Ridha. For sure, there's a letter he writes a year after the Shahada of Imam al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi. After a year, he writes the letter to Imam al-Ridha, greeting him and saying salam to him as the Imam, and expressing his condolences on the Shahada of Imam al-Kadhim. And then in the letter, he says, I apologize for doing this a year late. The reason is I was confused. I wasn't sure if Musa ibn Ja'far has passed. In other words, he was that fitna of waqf, a man that has so many hadith, is so reliable in hadith, the fitna of waqf that happened, Ali ibn Abi Hamza al-Bata'ini, al-Qandi, and a few others, they led of the representatives of Imam al-Kadhim. This person is a good person. He was looking and searching for the truth, but he was confused for a whole year. He didn't recognize the imamah of Imam al-Ridha salamullah alayhi. Of course, because he was a good man, as soon as that became evident to him, he responded or he communicated to the imam, he apologized. And I will check that other account. I think it is Bazanti with Imam al-Ridha. It's a nice hadith in terms of us being trained. There's a nice spiritual hadith. If it's them, I'm pretty sure it is, but I'll check to make sure of that, and all that happens. Yunus, however, is an example of one of those great companions. He lived in the same time as well. Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman knew beforehand that this fitna will occur. That's how close to the Ahlul Bayt he was. That's how much knowledge he had of the Ahlul Bayt. He knew this fitna is going to occur. It says that as soon as Imam al-Kadhim was martyred in prison, Imam al-Ridha in Medina, Imam al-Kadhim was in Baghdad, obviously. He was assassinated and or tortured to death, and he was martyred by the thugs of Harun, and Harun himself was a thug. In Baghdad this occurred. Imam al-Ridha was obviously in Medina. And obviously he knows when his dad was... As soon as his dad was martyred, Imam al-Ridha, as opposed to his father, you know, when Imam al-Kadhim became the Imam, everything was hush-hush. Close companions of Imam al-Sadiq didn't know who the next Imam is. That's why the whole issue of the Fatahis, Abdullah al-Aftah, and people believing he's the Imam, that occurred because the Imam of the next Imam was not clear who's the next Imam. It wasn't clear. And Imam al-Kadhim was not open and announcing his imamah in the initial days. It took a while before he came out publicly and stated that he's the imam. But with Imam al-Ridha, as soon as his father passed, he came out. They say, this is the wording of it, he like set a table out in a sense. I don't know if this is literally meant, and I'm not sure if those words exactly are mentioned. The idea, he came out publicly and made it clear that he's the imam. That was part of the responsibility of Imam in this fitna of waqf. He needs to provide clarity that, no, this is the Imam. The last Imam has passed, and now the Imam that is alive is Imam al-Ridha salamullah alayhi. He did it right after Imam al-Kadhim passed. Following Imam al-Ridha, Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman, as soon as Imam al-Kadhim passed, and this fitna just begun to start, Yunus started announcing Imam al-Ridha is the next Imam. Zero doubt. Zero confusion, even knowing that the fitna will happen and his responsibility in the context of fitna. He didn't just keep it to himself, like, oh, you know, whoever wants to. There was a big conflict within the Shia community, huge conflict. They hated each other's guts. Wrong things were said, of course, from the side of the Waqifis. And then on this side, those who knew the truth had to stand against that. Stand up to that. But if you stood up for the truth, you're going to get bashed by these people who yesterday you considered them the representatives of Imam al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi. And they were representatives of Imam al-Kadhim. Now you have to stand against them. Within the Shia community, these disputes, it becomes difficult for a person to know. Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman is someone that right when that thing happened, he knew it was going to happen, and he came out and shared the truth he knew with the Ahlul Bayt. Rahmatullah alayhim, these were both great people, but Some are better than others. Yunus is a great companion. We hope that we aspire to become more like those types of companions for our imams, inshallah. Inshallah, next session we will start with hadith numbers.